most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome to Sports Talk on this Monday afternoon. I'm John Wilkerson. Vince Ferrara continues to pinch hit for Jimmy Hyams. Today and tomorrow, Vince has continued to just, there's just no reason to change a winning combination. That's how we're approaching it. So Jimmy will be back later this week, but Vince, unbelievable in terms of just your Iron Man duty in pinch hitting.
I appreciate it. Look, Jimmy Hyams shouldn't change it either. If you're on vacation and it's working, stay on vacation. I would.
Yeah, there you go. So we do have a lot coming your way today. It's Monday, so that means Dr. Jerry Punch, 3:30 to 4:30. We will have post-game reaction from Coach Barnes as it was a tough weekend for Tennessee. Tough weekend for Tennessee basketball. Both the Vols and the Lady Vols had big opportunities. We're in situations to either, one, preserve a lead and get a win in Columbia, or pull closer, perhaps vie for the lead. But any time the Lady Vols got close yesterday after trailing by as many as 13, turnover, missed shot, missed opportunity. So it was a rough weekend for the Vols and Lady Vols. But we'll have comments from Rick Barnes. We'll also have Rob Lewis of AllQuest.com at 5 o'clock. Tennessee baseball coach Tony Vitello joins us at 5:30 as it was a big weekend for the Big Orange, a 3-0 start. They get ready for Charlotte tomorrow, and then they'll head to Round Rock, Texas for a stacked field in the Round Rock Classic, where they will play Texas Tech on Friday, Houston on Saturday, and then Stanford Sunday before returning home. We'll have a practice report with Eric Kane, post-game reaction from Lady Vols coach Kelly Harper. Fantastic crowd on hand yesterday at Thompson Bowling Arena. Great support for the Lady Vols. Unfortunately, they came up 2 points short in that loss to Texas A&M. But we have a lot coming your way today, so why don't we jump right to it? We also have your chance to win with a Sports Fix at 6. And we'll tell you it's time for News and Notes, brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people you trust. Vince, we start with basketball Saturday, basketball Sunday, and it was, as I said earlier, a tough, tough weekend for Tennessee.
Yeah, Tennessee with a late lead against South Carolina, couldn't get quality possessions on offense, had the disputed charge call on John Fulkerson. What did you think of that call, John?
Well, I thought flopping was a point of emphasis. Rick Barnes said he thought it was a clear charge.
And in looking at the tape afterwards, he said that in the post game, and then looking at it today, he did think that the defender was there. I was not convinced that the defender was there, personally. Also think that as you're seeing more and more as the year has gone on, post players are really embellishing contact, and any little touching, they go flying into the front row. And so I'm just not a fan of it. Look, it's people do it. And if you get away with it for your team, it's great. When it happens against you, it's awful. Mm-hmm. And it takes away from the game. I'm sure Tennessee's gotten away with that from time to time this year, but it seems like officials are putting their stamp on ball games more and more as this year has gone on. And foul calls and the free throw line has been a factor in a lot of Tennessee's games, mm-hmm. wins and losses. Sometimes it's been to Tennessee's ad, other times it has been against Tennessee. But those post foul calls, John, have gone the way of pass interference in football.
That's an excellent comparison.
It's a big guessing game, I think. Mm-hmm. I think the officials don't know what they see. They see the body language and the reaction and the movements after the perceived contact or the level of contact, and that's what they're reacting to versus, do you see it or do you not see it?
Yeah, a lot of officials anticipate calls.
Right.
And so they think this is what's going to happen. They blow their whistle. And a lot of times, I'm not saying the majority, I'm just saying a lot of times, the play doesn't happen the way it was whistled.
I mean, even honestly, going in Tennessee's favor, after Tennessee had the turnover, I think it might have been the It was one of the runouts that Kotsar had because he got to the line late in that game to help seal it. And to his credit, he made those throws. The opportunity was presented to him, and he made his free throws.
Tennessee had its chances to win at the free throw line and did not.
Absolutely. But in one of those runouts, Fulkerson went to grab him, and they called the foul before Fulkerson ever touched him. And if he did touch them, it was a hand graze versus an actual call. Sometimes you can smack a guy when you're trying to intentionally foul, and they won't call anything. They'll let you pass it around. That was called knowing that he was just trying to foul him for the sake of stopping the clock before he had ever done anything and barely did anything. So it's not just, oh, it was against Tennessee. It's that's the way the inconsistencies of officiating. And again, I am personally not. I know plenty of fans pointed to the officiators costing the game, but how about making a better percentage of your free throws? Mm-hmm. That was a clear advantage Tennessee had over South Carolina going into the game because South Carolina had been really bad at making their free throws, and they continue to be really bad. But you went down to their level and missed out on opportunities. Then the execution late in the game, Jordan Bowden forcing the ball to Vescovi, who has to try to split two defenders and turns it over, whereas Rick Barnes said in the postgame, hey, they were keeping the ball away from Vescovi. We need Bowden to make a play there. And that's another one of those examples. Jordan Bowden, as great a kid as he is, and as well as he's playing defensively, that's one of those rise-up moments for Jordan Bowden. And he has just not been able to or willing to jump on those and try to put the team on his back or make plays and shots for them. It's just not his deal. It's not his comfort level. So, you know, it's tough. But, you know, Fulkerson with some turnovers, even though he had a career high. Even when you're getting some positives, you have some other things to cancel them out.
Yeah, and that was what stood out. You can't miss the amount of free throws Tennessee missed. You can't turn the ball over, the number of times Tennessee turned it over, and expect to get a win, especially on the road. And Tennessee had its chances, and in the end, this is probably going to be a game that haunts them pretty significantly.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to be a game or two away from NCAA tournament contention. I mean, I think they'd have to rally even to get in that kind of position. Right now, I think the NIT is still in not any sort of lock.
Well, I don't think there's any question. You've got Vanderbilt tomorrow night. And then you have five games remaining that feature two games against Auburn. And then you have at Kentucky, you have at Arkansas, and you have Florida here. And Florida has shown signs of perhaps finding some consistency to its season, which has been a crapshoot this year with all the youth that they've added, as well as the nation's top transfer target in Blackshear. Mm-hmm. So Florida, whether it's turned a corner, who knows? Doesn't mean there aren't winnable games for Tennessee. And I think if Tennessee were to find a way to split these final six games, they're going to have a nice resume that they can say they deserve to be included if they get some work done in Nashville.
The net, that's the key, is if they get work done in Nashville. The net is still 62 for Tennessee. That's still, you still got some making up to do because of the Washington sliding out of quad one. Tennessee has a 1-7 record in quadrant one now, which is the most judged and compared. That's a bad record. Now, you mentioned those games ahead, and there's almost all of them are quad one games. I think one, you got a quad three Vandy, maybe I think the Florida home game is a quad two. The rest are quad one. So opportunity to make up ground. But this team would have to be completely transformed from anything we'd seen in order for them to do that. 3-3, I think would be very impressive
long
if they
shot.
Did it.
Yeah. I would put that in the long shot category, but I also think that it would not be shocking. It's just, it comes down to, again, the team performing the way you haven't seen the team perform on a consistent basis. And that's something that Rick Barnes talked about last Monday with his weekly press conference. And I don't think there's any question that, but I'll also say, and I appreciate Coach saying the way he said it. You take a look at where they are, and sure, it has a chance to have been better if Tennessee performs the way it can. But 14-11, 6-6, following the loss to South Carolina, Coach Barnes pointed out, you lose one of your senior leaders in Lamonte Turner very early in the season, so he's just gone. Then you have Jordan Bowden and the struggles that he's had offensively, struggles unlike he's had in his career prior to this point. You also look at where you have, where are you if you don't add a newly turned 18-year-old from Uruguay who has started every SEC game for you and has played, I think, incredibly well, all things considered. Too many turnovers, I don't think there's any question, but you look at him being essentially dropped in into the middle of the basketball season and what he's been able to do, and we are still talking about somebody less than 18 and a half. Mm-hmm. And then you also have Urosh, who I don't think he's made the impact that that I think fans would have hoped to have seen, but I also think that there were times along the way where it's been cautioned it's going to be a learning curve for him as he's playing his first action in basketball in more than a year and a half. So I just think that for Coach Barnes to say he's proud of the fight that this team has shown, I think that's worth noting. Doesn't mean it's not disappointing. Doesn't mean it's not frustrating. And right. It doesn't mean that they didn't have the opportunity to play better and have more success. But I do think that they have indeed shown fight.
They have shown fight. The effort, I don't think, has really been in question at any point this year. It's just a matter of, are they good enough and do they make too many mistakes at times? I think that's what it comes down to. They just don't have the margin of error that mm-hmm. they did a year ago. I mean, last year, they could do a lot of things that just didn't make sense, or one guy could have an awful day. They had four other guys that can pick up the slack. And if they turned it over 20 times, guess what? They can make shots on the other end and more than make up for it. So there's just a lot of things that are different about this team. But yes, the effort and the want to of this team, the fight, has never been in question. And I think it's part of Coach Barnes when he knows what he has. So when he has a really talented group, he's going to be harder on them because he knows where they're at and he wants to keep pushing them. When and in wins, he wasn't satisfied last year. Now, after losses, not that he's satisfied, but he's a little bit more understanding because he knows what he has with his guys and they're trying to get the most out of what they do have. So, but one other thing about the tournament that you mentioned, the thing is you got to avoid that first day at the SEC tournament. If you get 11 through 14, you play on the first day, you know, yeah, you can say, well, you get an extra win to help your resume, but it gives you a W, but it really didn't help your resume.
Right.
Because you're not playing good teams.
Correct.
So it doesn't really give you that much credit. It just makes it harder to advance into the tournament, into the quarters or those semis or whatever, where you probably need to be. So they got to avoid that. And with a tougher part of their schedule coming up, you know, it's still going to be a challenge with you know, number three. There's 3, 4, and 8 teams. There are two games behind Tennessee and A&M and Alabama at 6-6. So that's kind of what to look for to want to stay above those teams.
That's Vince Ferrara. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break. We've got more news and notes coming your way. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Turn us up and embarrass the Alabama fan that sits in the next cubicle. This is 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues. That's Vince Ferrara pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Let's go to the phones and check in with Jim. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Doing well?
Doing well, thanks. Hope you are.
Yes, I am. And, you know, Vince, when you were talking about the inconsistencies in basketball officiating, one of the major topics I see a lot of major inconsistencies in, and I'm going to title it in the crime and punishment area of sports cheating. You know, my earliest recollection of a serious punishment was back in the early 60s when Paul Hornung and Alex Karras were suspended for an entire year in the NFL for gambling by Commissioner Pete Rozelle.
Mm-hmm.
And recently you saw Tom Brady was suspended for 4 games in the Deflategate situation. whether it was warranted or not, he was suspended. Now, in baseball, you've seen baseball players suspended for, obviously, PEDs. You saw repercussions from corked bats. And the latest major cheating scandal is the Houston Astros. And you've got now the manager was suspended, and the general manager was suspended. Now, they both were fired by the owner. Nothing with the players, though, because apparently from the commissioner, they've suffered enough. It's a little odd to me that there would be no suspension for the players taking part in this. I'm interested in your whole take on this situation, even going back to the ownership of this, the apology, non-apologies, or whatever they were. What's your take on this entire situation, the way it's been handled, and where it is right now?
Jim, as far as the players not getting suspended, I think that comes back to the players getting immunity to speak and for them to get to the bottom of this. Now, the question is could Major League Baseball have found this out and gotten all the details and found out just the extent of it and done as thorough an investigation if they didn't offer immunity to those players? So I think that was the trade-off, is baseball wanted to find out and get all the details, and it was at the cost of the players not getting the punishment on the other end. I don't know if they could have accomplished the same thing. Probably would have been more difficult. Maybe you wouldn't have gotten every little detail if you didn't have player cooperation. But I'm not a fan of the players getting off scot-free. And obviously, the Houston being able to keep their World Series. To me, I don't think you are sending enough of a message to the entire league, to the fan base, and to anyone that has this romantic tie to this sport and their kids that play it and have that emotional connection. I don't think you're sending them a message enough about how this type of cheating won't be tolerated by not punishing, not taking that World Series away, and then not punishing the players. But, John, I think it is. They traded off the access to the info versus and no punishment for it.
Yeah, and what I would think that what you could wind up with is that they wanted to have just a free conversation where the information was abundant. I do wonder if they find themselves in a really unenviable position, because what if all their focus was on 2017 and yet they come across transgressions in 2018 and 2019? Then I think you would have at least an avenue to open the door and go back in with very specific punishments. But also, that probably would have curtailed what they would have found out about 2017 if they had approached it that way. But it is. The optics aren't good, because it just looks like there's no punishment whatsoever for the guys that were the meat and potatoes and the driving force behind this scandal. There's the actual players themselves that carried it out. And I'm not saying it was all their idea and different things. I'm just saying that the ones that carried it out are walking away free and clear. And I think that's what has upset so many, especially those that went against them in key moments, whether it be the playoffs, the World Series, you name it.
I did not know the information regarding that there may have been an agreement or a trade-off as far as punishment for information. I didn't know that, which may be a factor in this, as you say. The bottom line is that the championship that they supposedly won or did, got credit for, will be tainted forever. The Houston Astros will go through a lot of booing in every situation, every place they go to this year, rightfully so. It's an amazing scandal.
And Jim, I'd one more thing. I think Major League Baseball, this is one of those unintended consequences. I think by Major League Baseball not taking that World Series away from them has only added scrutiny to the Houston Astros moving forward.
Yeah, I agree with that. They will be looked at very closely. Guys, I really appreciate the information. You guys have a great afternoon.
You too, Jim. Thank you very much. We'll get a break. When we return, Dr. Jerry Punch joins us on Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson, Vince Ferrara, sitting in for Jimmy Hyams, and it's always a pleasure to say hello to Dr. Jerry Punch, who joins us. Doc's appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, and New Balance Knoxville in the Suburban Shopping Center just west of Westtown Mall. They're waiting for you right now to walk through their doors and give you a personalized fitting that, Doc, it will change your existence.
It absolutely will. They talk about how shoes and a mattress, and they won't sell you a mattress, but they will do a great job with the shoes. And Sharon and all her wonderful staff, you walk in, they'll measure you, they'll talk to you about what you need, what you want, what you've been dealing with. You may not even know that the shoes you've been running in or working out in aren't exactly what you need. And, boy, it'll change your life because you'll go out there and be able to walk, run, whatever. Just if you just want to walk and go visit and go on vacation or whatever. But if you want to work out, you know, CrossFit, you name it, they will perfectly fit you for what you need, and you'll walk out of there a happy camper.
Yeah, they will take your individual characteristics, and they'll match that against the more than 75 models they have, and you come away with what will be the most comfortable fit that you've ever had, as well as what you said, Doc, the tools you need to do your very best, whether it's just go through a day pain-free or raise the bar on what you're getting done when it comes to your physical activity.
Now, unlike Jimmy Hams here, let's talk about 75 models and came back and said, where were they? I said, Jimmy, their shoes are different models of shoes. He ended up buying shoes anyway, but that's okay. But it's 75 models of shoes that they have for sale at New Balance of Knoxville.
Doc, it was a lot of pomp and circumstance in Daytona. They were able to do everything but run the race. So, unfortunately, Mother Nature had other ideas, so they go at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
They do, and the 62nd running of the Daytona 500, and it looked like it was going to be a beautiful day until they decided to drop the green flag or wave the green flag. You never drop the green flag. That's a bad thing to do. And the sad part is, you know, I get me started, and I realize it's all us, I should say us, it's television that moves these start times back to 3:30, 3:37, whatever it was. And if they started this race at 12:30 or 1 o'clock, halfway is 100 laps, and you would have easily been done to be at halfway, and everybody would be home with their families. And remember, they got to be in Las Vegas on Thursday for race number two. So this really makes it a very short week for the teams, the competitors. And then, you know, you start and stop and start and stop. And these guys, they've been there for now almost 2 weeks. And it really wears them out.
Well, and you hate it for the fans. One thing that's been outstanding, and it's also, I think, in contrast to what you've seen throughout the rest of the year when it comes to NASCAR, is the attendance has been unbelievable at Daytona, and they just completed what was millions of dollars of renovations. It was going to be, perhaps and potentially still could be, the best fan experience for many. But while even today is a holiday, there were a lot that had their travel plans set and weren't able to hang around. But it's such a shame, because all of this was pointing to this being as special a Daytona 500 as there's been in years, just for all the hard work they put into making it.
Couldn't have said it better, John. And you know, the energy, the vibe that was around this race was back. The energy at Daytona, 101,500 seats, sold out grandstands. Packed infield. They had to stop letting people in the infield on Saturday. Couldn't get any more in there. They let some guy in a giant limousine yesterday. But he had some clout. So anyway, but aside from that, I'm glad he was there. Great visit by President Trump. But what a great way to start the year with all those people there. And that's exactly what you want if you want a NASCAR season like that. I don't think I've seen that kind of vibe in over a decade. And it just goes to show you what Jim France and they're doing to be able to get this sport back where it needs to be.
Any standout, any things of note out of the portion of the race they were able to get in anything of note for you?
Well, I think it's going to be a little racier than people realize. I think in years past, people have sat back and said, okay, I'm going to see what I've got. I'm going to sit and ride. And we saw early, the car to me that stood out early that in the first 20 laps that we saw that could run by itself and pass people was Kevin Harvick. Mm-hmm. And he absolutely looked like he was shot out of a cannon at times. He started toward the back and he was coming on the bottom side of the racetrack and able to move up. I think Harvick, Logano, and Hamlin are probably the three quickest cars. Not sure what Ricky Stenhouse has. I'm thrilled that he was able to win the pole for JTG Racing, Jody and Tad Geschechter, who have Knoxville ties, and obviously Brad Doherty, who played a little bit of NBA basketball, my buddy Brad. I'm thrilled for them. They have Rick Hendrick engines, so they got good horsepower. The question is, the big question's always been, does that team have enough strength and depth to be able to have a car that can come on pit road and come off with the big boys? Can they do it that way? Can they get it done in the trenches? You've seen people who may have a great quarterback or a couple great receivers, but do they have enough guys up front? So that's the question. Can they do it with pit stops? And so we'll see. I mean, certainly no question that Ricky Stenhouse can get it done down there. So, and I think the big thing is the Chevys. I think the Chevys looked much better with the new Camaro that they debuted this year. New design of the front and back of the Camaro, much more balanced, a little quicker, a little slicker, a little bit better geared to being able to push in the draft and be pushed in the draft. So I think that's going to be interesting to watch today. And here again, you know, it's and what we saw last Sunday with the Busch crash, Busch clash, what ended up being the Busch crash with like five cars finishing that had a chance to win it, was the fact that this new tapered spacer no longer have a restrictor plate. They've got 150 more horsepower. I thought it was about 130. Jeff Gordon said 150. Which means the closing rate of cars coming up on you in a draft is much faster, some 8 or 9 miles an hour faster. So if you pull out to stop somebody or block somebody, they may hit the brakes, but they jump back into throttle. They got enough throttle response now to go right back by you, and you keep blocking them, they're going to turn you, and it's going to be a mess, which is what we saw happen on Sunday.
What'd you make of the Toyotas not being high up when in the starting lineup? Going in, I guess they weren't in the top 12 or 13. They were pretty far down. What'd you make of that?
Yeah, I think Eric Jones was the highest starting Toyota. I think here's the thing. You know, the Toyotas realize they've got a real good race car. And Eric Jones, despite a car being, he was, you know, damaged, he was able to get pushed by Denny Hamlin to win in the Busch Clash. But that was a different car. That was not their Daytona 500 car. You know, I'd say that they have speed. They may not have single lap speed we didn't see in qualifying, but they are really good when the track starts getting slicker. Their balance, that's the big thing people talk about, how the Toyotas, I mean, Joe Gibbs Racing won 19 races last year. Just that team in Toyota won 19 races last year. And remember, they're outnumbered. There's only five Toyotas in the entire starting lineup. Wow. And so when the race started, you saw the guys that were up front, the Kyle Busches and I think the Martin Truexes, they dropped back in the back because Denny Hamlin had to go to the back of the pack because they had problems getting to inspection on Sunday morning. So they dropped back there. And so now all five of those Toyotas are toward the back of the pack, trying to stay out of harm's way early on. But you watch, those guys will all be a factor. They will draft up there when they need to. There's five of them, and the other 35 cars are either Chevys or Fords.
Well, how much of a factor is teamwork in this year's Daytona 500?
Huge teamwork. I've never seen drivers be more honest. I thought Fox did a really nice job with their pre-race. When they ask a Ford driver, they ask Edsel Ford, and they said, okay, what's the deal on teamwork? They said, we've heard your drivers have been told that if you can't win it, you better make sure another Ford does. He said, yep. And Chevy's been told the same thing. They asked Rick Hendrick, and Rick Hendrick said, we've been told by General Motors, if your Chevy Camaro can't win it, you better darn be sure that it's another Chevy Camaro it is. In other words, in that last lap, you don't move up and help a Ford or a Toyota win the race, or else we'll deal with the consequences after the race is over. So it's pretty straight. You stick to your brand, and you make sure you help whoever you can help. If your car isn't good enough, like Denny Hamlin did, he was a lap down for the Busch Clash. He pushed his teammate to victory lane. But you better make sure, and this is huge because every General Motors executive that matters, and the Ford people, and the Toyota people for that matter, they're all there. So that's pretty important. So and a local driver was down there trying to qualify, you know, and had sponsorship from Toyota of Knoxville, trying to get in an older car and a much, much weaker engine. So, you know,
Chad Fincham, right?
Chad Fincham. Yeah. Chad Fincham was down there and gave it a ran in the Xfinity race mm-hmm. on Saturday. And, he was in the qualifying in one of the twin duels, just didn't have the horsepower. It's hard when you go down there because down there it's not driver, it's car. Do you have a good enough car? It's just, you can't do it if you don't have the horse, the ponies and the money to make that car go fast.
Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, right there in the Suburban Shopping Center, just west of Westtown Mall. We'll get a break. A final segment of this first hour of Sports Talk is next. 656-9900 is how you join us. 656-9900 puts you on 99.1, the sports animal.
Download the TuneIn app so you can take 99.1, the sports animal, with you wherever you go.
Final segment of this first hour of Sports Talk. Doc Punch with us until 4:30. If you have a question or comment for Doc, 656-9900, 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Plenty to talk about in regards to not only the Daytona 500 pushed back to a 4 o'clock start today, so that's in less than 10 minutes. But, Doc, I know it's always something to see, the emotion that goes along with special ceremonies like we saw over the weekend. But at Belmont, they named their floor in honor of legendary coach Rick Byrd, which was fantastic to see. And then also Florida, Billy Donovan now has the court named in his honor for the two national championships he won with the Gators.
Two great guys and two well-deserved honors. I think Rick Byrd, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I would go over and do probably the marquee game in the OVC, which would be Belmont Murray State, and it would be there or at Murray State. And just what a class individual, how he handled his players, his program, how much he loved the kids. He's always, you know, he looked the part. He dressed for success. You expected those kids. I mean, it was a very complex offense he ran, and a lot of times he didn't have anywhere near the talent. But he'd go play Duke and play these teams in the tournament, be able to, I mean, you know, two-point games. And just, you know, what a credit he is and was and has been to college basketball. I think he's going to be at the tip-off club this week on Wednesday here in town. So what a great honor for him. And for Billy Donovan, what a good guy. I remember Billy Donovan coming to bringing his top-ranked Florida team to play at Tennessee, and the Bruce Pearl was here, and they were doing the cancer tribute.
Yes.
And Billy, the night of the game, Joni and I were down there, and Bruce had had a whole group of people in that were supporting the UT Medical Center.
Outlive, yeah.
Outlive, and Billy comes over to speak, you know, at the hotel. This is the night of the game. I mean, what visiting coach would do that? But that's the kind of person he was. Bruce said, "Look, I'll repay the courtesy and the kindness when we come to Florida for anything you've got going. But this is important to me, the Outlive and support the Cancer Institute at UT Medical Center." So Billy Donovan, happy for him, well deserved honor at Florida, and likewise for Rick Byrd and the whole Byrd family. I mean, yeah. Ben, his dad, was a legendary sports writer here.
Yes, very much so.
And Rick always told us stories about how he would sit with his dad and listen to his dad interview Adolph Rupp. How cool is that when you're a young kid thinking about, I'm listening to my dad interview Adolph Rupp, and yet I'm gonna become a basketball coach someday.
Yeah. So that was really something to see. And then as Vince and I talked about it earlier this hour, just a really tough outing for Tennessee. Volunteers were in position to get what would have been a big win, a big feather in their cap, a victory at South Carolina, but just didn't make the plays down the stretch to get the job done.
Yeah, some empty possessions when you least could afford them in the final minute and a half, 2 minutes of the game, turned the ball over, missed some key free throws, and that would have been a huge win on the road at South Carolina, even though you'd beaten them here, beaten them there. And you know, the announcers on the game were talking, everyone was talking about how the winner of that game really positions himself to maybe be on that line to get in the NCAA tournament if the things fall the right way. And it just didn't. You know, Tennessee played so well. I didn't agree with the charge call. After watching it several times, I still think that that I wish the officials would be a little more aggressive when it comes to what I consider to be flopping. And unfortunately, I've gone to some high school basketball games recently in the area for some really good basketball teams, and I've seen more and more flopping, which frustrates me. I wish high school coaches would not allow their players to do that, because I think it's going to – but until the officials hold them accountable there and in the college level, that's going to happen. Anyway, I thought South Carolina played hard, came back, was able to win the ball game, hit this, one of the poorest free throw shootings in college shooting teams in college basketball, but they made their free throws down the line and they were able to hang on for the win. And for the Lady Vols, just frustration. Got to be fresh. Can't you turn the ball over again? Possessions, empty possessions. You just can't do that. And talking about the men's team, I heard you guys mention, and I agree with you. Six games left for Tennessee, for the Vols. Vanderbilt, and you got two with Auburn, Kentucky, yep. Arkansas, and Florida.
Correct.
And Florida is they're starting to really get on their feet a little bit and play a little more consistently, play to the experience of and that they need to play at. And Auburn, who knows? I mean, they're unbeatable one night, and next night they can't throw it in the ocean, sort of like Tennessee at times. So I think Tennessee has to win three of those six, would need to win three of those six and then stand up in the tournament to get some consideration. But I think it's an uphill climb right now for the Vols.
That's Dr. Jerry Punch with Vince Ferrara. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back with hour number two of Sports Talk. We've got another half hour with Doc. Doc's appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, the Sports Animal.